Hello, it's Debbie. On Wednesday, July 8th, 2015, reading the first part of the Decatur Herald and Review. We're just going to start with local news. It says Decatur hospitals. Headline reads, Decatur Hospital, stand ready against tornadoes. The picture on the top of the article indicates that Decatur Memorial Hospital, the communications room, monitors radar and alerts the campus if there's an emergency weather situation. This is July, the article was written July 7th, and by Emily Steele of the Herald and Review. Decatur. When the tornado sirens go off, people know to seek shelter in a basement and away from windows. But that option isn't always available inside a hospital. The windows are large, patients can't move themselves, elevators aren't an option for those on top floors, and visitors don't know where to go. During tornado season, Decatur's two hospitals are especially at risk when storms hit the area. So staff constantly monitor local weather and regularly revisit and practice their emergency plans. We do drills at least twice a year for any number of hazards, said Cindy Jenkins, the director of regulatory compliance, oversees emergency preparations at Decatur Memorial Hospital. DMH and St. Mary's Hospital follow a similar system of announcing severe weather watches and warnings through the hospital overhead or through the computer system. Staff, some of whom are storm spotters, will also decide based on the storm's location if a hospital-specific tornado warning is needed. If a hospital-specific tornado warning is needed, that's when people know, okay, this is serious, we have to jump to action, Jenkins said. Bill Wood, St. Mary's Emergencies Medical Services Coordinator, has six radios in his office connecting him to other hospitals, storm spotters, and emergency agencies. He also gets weather alerts on his cell phone, and several outside agencies will contact him during severe weather in a system that is meant to be redundant with built-in backups. He monitors radar during severe weather and decides if St. Mary's is in a storm path. We've had to make that call several times in the past, Wood said. We've had some near misses here. He referenced the April 1996 tornadoes that came through Decatur that barely missed both hospitals. The twisters injured 62 people and left behind millions of dollars in damage. Buildings with large concentrations of people in small areas, such as hospitals or schools, where people can't escape quickly, need to take extra care, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Hospitals nationwide learned by example when the hospital in Joplin, Missouri was hit by a tornado in May 2011. Some hospital departments are naturally more protected than others. For example, most intensive care unit rooms at St. Mary's don't have windows. Neither do the operating rooms at DMH. But in other rooms, curtains are closed and staff move patients and visitors into inner hallways. Those who can't be moved quickly are covered with blankets and towels. However, the lobbies with large walls of windows and numerous visitors are especially vulnerable. When we get a warning for St. Mary's, we have minutes to respond, Wood said. Sheriff's Lieutenant James Root, the Macon County Emergency Management Agency coordinator, said the hospitals are on a list of agencies he deals closely with before and after storms. If the National Weather Service holds a severe weather conference call, a sign of possible significant damage, representatives from the hospital are included. So they're getting the firsthand knowledge of how bad the event will be, Root said. No one likes to think of what would happen if a local hospital were hit, like Joplin's Hospital, but staff members are prepared for the worst. If we were to get hit, we could have a tent city set up outside within 3 hours, Wood said. Ambulance traffic would be redirected, backup generators would kick on, oxygen lines would be shut down, and first responders would focus efforts on the hospital since it's considered critical infrastructure. Jenkins said healthcare providers will always step up during an emergency. It's because we drill, but there's also the type of people who work in hospitals and who are drawn to this vocation, she said. They want to help. That's what they do. End of the article about alerts within hospitals in Decatur. Next article is June rains proved too much of a good thing. Photo caption of some very muddy water running through a golf course. Stevens Creek, which runs through Hickory Point Golf Course, overflowed and caused problems during the Decatur Forsyth Classic. The golf tournament was shortened to 18 holes from its customary 54. June 2015 was the wettest June on record in Illinois. This is from Emily Steele today with the Herald and Review. Decatur, it's official. Last month was the rainiest June on record for Illinois. More storms than usual, and the remnants of a tropical system passed through the Midwest, leaving behind 9.53 inches, twice the average monthly rainfall, according to the State Climatological Office. The downpours put a damper on camps, baseball games, and summer staples, including the Macon County Fair and the Decatur Forsyth Classic, forcing event planners to cancel or watch a storm wash them out. The golf tournament was shortened to 18 holes from its customary 54. Welcome to Illinois. It can be sunny one minute and rainy the next, said Kelly McCourt Edwards, who organizes the outdoor concert series Chill on the Hill. If rain is in the forecast, starting at 10 a.m., McCourt Edwards, the Mount Zion event coordinator, checks the weather every 30 minutes to make a decision before 5 p.m. With a storm coming in June 25th, she chose to reschedule, a move that affects the performers, volunteers, and vendors. One of the Central Park concerts leading up to Decatur celebration was also rained out, and producer Lori Sturgill said Reverend Peyton's Big Damn Band is still being rescheduled. We've never had a season like this, McCourt Edwards said. Meteorologist Chris Gielhart with National Weather Service in Lincoln said a wet May and June means flood warnings are in effect along much of the Illinois River and parts of the Sangamon River. Which are in flood stage. They're very close to having Illinois levels be as high as they've ever been, Gielhart said. With weather radars readily available online through TV or smartphone apps, fewer boaters have tested Lake Decatur's waters this year. The way it's been with everybody having radar on their phones, if you know it's going to rain, you don't go out, said Greg Ferguson. While rain kept many away, high water levels benefit the Decatur Yacht Club sailboat and their keels, a fin that extends from the bottom of the boat. If you don't have enough rain, sometimes we can't get in the water, said Ferguson, the club's vice commodore. He was able to go sailing Thursday, his 11th time on the water, but avoided the rush of holiday and fair weather boating traffic. Normally, I have 25 sails by the 4th of July, Ferguson said. Decatur Park District Executive Director Bill Clevenger said the weather affected outdoor camp activities, evening movies in the parks, youth and adult baseball schedules, and attendance at Scoville Zoo and the golf course. Everything that's weather dependent has seen some decreased revenues, Clevenger said. In his 35 years working in park districts, he can't recall ever having to deal with this much rain. Maintenance staff can redirect their focus to other projects this time of year. With all the rain, we have had trouble keeping up with just the general mowing in the park, he said. Fairview Park Pool was busy several weeks after it opened May 23rd, but had to close early or completely 10 days so far this season due to lightning or heavy rains. It's a game you have to play, but we do try and stay open as much as possible, Recreation Supervisor Danita Deffenbaugh said. She points people to Pool's Facebook page or the Park District Alert System to be aware of delays or cancellations. But those looking for a break in the weather and sunny July days ahead may be disappointed. They're projecting a good chance of wetter than normal conditions continuing through July, Gielhart said. With a covered band stage and pavilion for the audience, McCourt Edwards said the show will go on at Chill the Hill unless there's lightning. She pointed to the rainy June 18th concert as proof. It ended up being a pretty beautiful evening with people dancing in the rain, she said. End of the article on the weather Next article, sound immersion, learning tricks to please ears of others. Decatur, teaching anyone how to think inside the box seems like an oxymoron. Yep, that's the key of a new series of summer immersion courses at Milligan University, making music business and commercial music majors proficient in the audio production of software that's become the industry standard. With Avid Pro Tools, using only your computer and plugins, you can do all your mixing in a box, said Kevin Guarney. Guarnieri, director of the university's Militrax recording studio in the Perkinson Music Center. Guarnieri and his students, all upperclassmen, completed instruction to Pro Tools on June 26th, and Tuesday began Intermediate Pro Tools, set to conclude July 24th in the Music Center's Computer Aided Instruction, or CAI, lab. The instructor plans to offer his students a chance to take Avid Pro Tools user certification test in the end. Megan Peterson, a music business slash commercial music major from New Douglas, took Recording Studio Techniques 1 and 2 this past year and is glad to be picking up the skills students in those classes will learn starting this fall. The more I take these classes and stay in the studio, the more I like engineering sound, Peterson said. For the next academic year, Tech 1 and Tech 2 will not only incorporate Pro Tools and become 3-credit classes, up from 2 each, the Music Center will also get 27 Mac Minis to replace the iMacs currently in the CAI lab. On Tuesday, Guarnieri talked primarily about assigning inputs and outputs, but fielded a question from Audrey Keeley, a music business commercial music major from Grand Rapids, Michigan, about changing the pitch of a track. There are at least two ways to do it. And another from Young Park, a commercial music major from Daejeon, South Korea, about which headphones are best. Guarney recommends the Grado Prestige series. Jordan Camp, a music business slash commercial music major from Decatur, said he's already getting faster at using Pro Tools. I want to be a recording engineer, and you need to be able to navigate Pro Tools, Camp said. This class is a confidence booster. End of the article on what they're learning about professional music production. Back, Mamtrak back on track after freight train derailment. Frightful picture of four people in emergency gear looking at a train off the track. But it says officials inspected derailed grain car Tuesday after 8 cars left the track late Monday night near north of Pontiac. The wreck closed the main rail line between Chicago and St. Louis, causing Amtrak passengers to return to their departure points. So, from Lee News Service an hour ago, Pontiac. A freight train that derailed overnight near Pontiac cut off Amtrak service on the Chicago to St. Louis line Tuesday, but passenger trains are running Wednesday morning. A Union Pacific train with 3 locomotives and 105 rail cars loaded with corn was departing the Prairie Central Co-op elevator at Old Route 66 and Livingston County Road 2000 North when 8 rail cars derailed about midnight Monday night. Amtrak's 2 Wednesday morning trains departing at 7:31 a.m. and 9:41 a.m. from Uptown Station are on time, according to Amtrak's website. Union Pacific spokesman Mark Davis said the cause of the derailment remains under investigation. Livingston County Sheriff's Police said there was an apparent mechanical problem with the rails. Crews worked into the night Tuesday clearing the rolled-over rail cars and repairing damaged tracks, Davis said. The goal was to have the repairs completed by 10:30 p.m. Tuesday. Amtrak spokesman Mark Magliari said Lincoln trains 304, 306, 305, and 307 were canceled Tuesday. Chartered bus service was arranged for those passengers, but full train service was expected to be restored on Wednesday, he said. Davis said several of the derailed cars crushed a van parked along the track, but a train crew member and the van driver got out of the van in time. Oh my goodness. The rail worker was treated for hand injury and released, he said. The van driver did not require medical attention. No one on the train was injured. Heavy equipment arrived Tuesday morning to move the rail cars. Davis said, but about 280 feet of track was damaged as a result of the derailment and need to be replaced. Magliari said an Amtrak train was just north of the site when the derailment occurred and had to return to Chicago. Passengers were taken by charter bus to St. Louis. Magliani said Amtrak already had arranged to bus passengers Tuesday morning because of a previously planned construction on part of the rail line. Mark Heil, general manager of Prairie Central Co-op, said the elevator operation was closed Tuesday because of the derailment, but is expected to resume operation as usual Wednesday. With all the rain today, it probably had minimal impact, he said. Besides, Livingston County Sheriff deputies, Pontiac Police, also were at the scene of the derailment. End of the article. An article out of Bloomington for the Lee News Service by Edith Brady Looney. Bloomington. When McLean County Coroner Kathy Davis has bad news to deliver, she often meets supervisors unprepared. Survivors. Let's start over again. Sorry. When McLean County Coroner Kathy Davis has bad news to deliver, she often meets survivors unprepared for the traumatic change that is about to occur in their lives. The addition of Chaplain Stuart Blade to the coroner's team will provide help to those who may become paralyzed in the wake of a tragedy. When someone dies, it doesn't just affect one person. It's everyone who loved and cared for them, said Davis. The April 7th plane crash that left seven dead in Bloomington mobilized dozens of emergency workers and all the resources of the coroner's office. The notification of families by Davis took all day and involved long visits with relatives in the Twin Cities and elsewhere. Soon after the tragedy, Davis followed up on conversations she had with Blade about his intent to become a chaplain. The full-time Bloomington firefighter paramedic was ordained and interested in serving as an on-call chaplain. Blade started his new role, which pays $16 an hour when he's on call, last month. As a chaplain, I can help fill the spiritual and emotional needs, whether it's a prayer or helping people make phone calls or other practical things. I'm there to support families. That can take a few minutes or a few hours, said Blade, 34. He was called on May 26 when a county employee was killed in an elevator accident at the McLean County Law and Justice Center. He met with family members and co-workers of John Hennigs after they received the tragic news. We're here to bring hope to the hopeless situation, said Blade, who accompanies the coroner when she notifies families of unexpected deaths. The Bloomington Fire Department is in the process of developing guidelines that could lead to similar position there, said Fire Chief Brian Moore. Training as a firefighter and the loss of an infant daughter in 2013 has prepared Blade for his new mission, he said. I've learned to take a deep breath before going into any situation. Unfortunately, I'm comfortable with death, but everyone isn't, and they need to help to understand the process, said Blade, a firefighter for 10 years. The death process, starting with the need for an autopsy in some cases, was the focus of training Blade obtained through Davis's office. She estimated about a third of the 530 deaths handled so far by the coroner's office in 2015 involved unexpected or traumatic deaths. Among them were four suicides, a category of deaths that is of major concern for Davis. Davis hopes to coordinate a community-based suicide prevention program. The coroner's office has medical and forensic duties, but there's more we can do to be proactive. There's a mental health aspect to suicide prevention and helping people when their needs are greatest, she said. Last year, the county recorded 20 suicides. Brad Targetta, Macoupin County Coroner and President of Illinois Coroners and Medical Examiners Association, applauded the chaplain concept. I think it's something that has value. The idea of having a minister there gives people peace of mind, said Targetta, who is unaware of another Illinois coroner who's brought a chaplain on board. Our first responders also need someone to talk to after a stressful call. But building that relationship can take time, said Blade. Firefighters are a tough group for gaining trust, but debriefing is critical, he said. Moore agreed. It's imperative that we have a method to decompress and talk to others that understand. I hope that Stuart will be instrumental in training our department members on what to look for in co-workers that are showing signs of coping issues, said Moore. Blade noted that more firefighters die in the U.S. as a result of suicide than in the line of duty. That's the end of that article. In other news, LaHood cruises to easy win in the 18th congressional race. Bloomington. Another LaHood is well on his way to representing Illinois' 18th congressional district. State Senator Darren LaHood, Republican Dunlap, defeated Brett Bart, news editor Mike Flynn of Quincy, and State Farm employee Donald Rents of Benson in Tuesday's special primary to advance to the September 10th general election. He'll be heavily favored against Democrat Rob Mellon, a Quincy High School teacher who Tuesday beat Springfield School Board member Adam Lopez in that party's primary. At press time, the AP showed LaHood had 26,251 votes, Flynn 10,873, Rents 986, with 635 of 739 precincts reporting. Among Democrats, Mellon had 3,961 votes to Lopez's 2,532, with 643 precincts reporting. LaHood, son of former U.S. Representative Ray LaHood, rode endorsements from Republican leaders and organizations, an expensive campaign and name recognition to an early victory. Oh, okay, let's do that again. To an easy victory on endorsements from Republican leaders, organizations, and expensive campaign and name recognition. He will likely succeed U.S. Representative Aaron Schrock, a Peoria Republican who resigned in March amid ethical and spending questions. Quote, people are disappointed, saddened, upset, LaHood told the Associated Press of Schrock on Tuesday night. They want to be sure that whoever they put in there as their next member of Congress doesn't make the same mistakes. Is a person that's of integrity, is somebody that has a track record, somebody that's going to stay grounded to the district. LaHood has proved during his time in Springfield to be more conservative than his father, who served as transportation secretary under Democratic President Barack Obama. But several voters told the AP on Tuesday they hope he'll serve similarly. I admired his father very much, and I'm hoping the apple doesn't fall far from the tree, said retired legislative researcher and Springfield resident Sherwin Swatz of LaHood. Flynn finished second after drawing support from conservatives who opposed LaHood's insider credentials and accused him of continuing a political dynasty. Rents, who portrayed himself as the race's everyman, was a distant third. Others voted for Democrats because they wanted to avoid a repeat of Schrock. I don't want another Republican Congress, said 67-year-old Maria Ferraro, a retired state worker and Sherman resident who voted for Lopez. I knew Schrock would do a terrible job, and he did, and this is before all the scandal. Mellon rebounded to win the Democratic nomination after losing to Daryl Miller in the May 2014 primary for the district. He has a tough road to Congress. Miller lost to Schrock last fall by 3-1 margin, even though he campaigned as a moderate, noting he ran for the seat as a Republican in 2012. I was very fortunate to get so many votes from the northern part of the district, doing it with my feet, with my hard work, and with my sweat, he said Tuesday. My challenge now is to appeal to the vast middle class. I'm not in the pocket of big money like the person from the other party, he said. If people want change in the way politics function now, there's really only one choice. Turnout was light throughout the sprawling district, which covers all or part of 19 counties. County clerks' turnout estimates range from 2-10%, with some counties predicting historic lows. The special primary, with just one race on the ballot, comes in peak summer vacation season. End of that article. Next article, Hobby Lobby opens doors at Hickory Point Mall. Forsyth, Denise Johnston had an eye out for when the new Hobby Lobby store would open at Hickory Point Mall in Forsyth. After finding out when the opening would be, Johnston was eager to be one of the first shoppers through the doors when the store opened Monday morning. Hobby Lobby sells a variety of paper for cards Johnston likes to make, so she said it would be worth the drive to the mall from her home in Bethany. I've been watching when I've been driving by. It's really going to add to this area. It'll be great, Johnston said. In moving from its former location on Pershing Road in Decatur, the store at the mall gives Hobby Lobby the additional space it's been seeking, store manager Jack Mead said. The mall store features 63,000 square feet of craft and home decor items, which Mead said is about 20,000 square feet more than the old space. The Oklahoma City-based retailers, more than 650 stores across the country, average about 55,000 square feet. "We need a bigger store," Mead said shortly after the new store opened. "We're happy to have a big store." More than 70,000 products are sold in each Hobby Lobby store. Its departments include floral, fabric, needle art, custom framing, baskets, home accents, wearable art, arts and crafts, jewelry making, scrapbooking, and paper crafting supplies. Plus, some items vary by season. Just 2 days after the 4th of July, shoppers could already find Thanksgiving and Christmas products for sale and displays just inside the front doors. "We're ready for the next season," Mead said. "It makes sense for crafters. They're making things in the fall." The store has more space than before to display products such as furniture and shelves, and shelves have been added to more conveniently show home lighting options, Mead said. Shoppers can reach the store from either inside the mall corridor or outside from the northeast end of the parking lot, as the hope is to draw more traffic to all stores in the mall. "It benefits both of us," Mead said. Hickory Point General Manager Kathy Mateer said Hobby Lobby has a different mix of products than what shoppers usually expect to find in an Acres store. She said construction moves smoothly and they're excited to have it open. "It's a lot of square footage for the mall, so it'll be one of the larger draws," Mateer said. "I think the community's excited about it as it's a new, neat look for customer shopping." The new Hobby Lobby store was built in part of the space JCPenney's formerly occupied before closing just more than a year ago. Another of the shopping center anchors, Sears, also closed last year, but that space remains vacant. Mateer said Sears space remains part of the center's redevelopment plans, but nothing has been finalized. Hobby Lobby will be open 9 to 8 Monday through Saturday. Unlike other stores in the mall, the Hobby Lobby in Forsyth will be closed Sundays like all its retailers' locations. In addition to Hobby Lobby, other stores are moving in elsewhere in the mall, and Annie Ann's Pretzels opened over the holiday weekend. "These two great additions to our center give our shoppers even more reasons to find everything they need at Hickory Point," Mateer said. "Auntie Anne's is known for its warm, freshly baked pretzels served right out of the oven. Its pretzels are served with mustard along with sweet and savory options. In addition to its menu that includes pretzel dogs, cinnamon sugar pretzel bites, and more." Auntie Anne's is in the center court near Von Maur. Another new store is drawing closer to its opening as Dr. G's Brainworks is in the hiring phase. Hickory Point Mall will be its third location, featuring various games aimed at early childhood development through seniors that test problem solving and critical thinking. End of the article. And the end of part one of the Decatur Herald and Review. This is Debbie saying, talk to you here soon.